I'm Jewel Banville, and this is Last Best Stories.
1, 2, 3.
If you're new to us, that's cool. We're pretty new, too. Episode 2, much like all of our other episodes, features. The idea is to give some air to stories by and often about Montanans. Each show will have a story that's longish, and one that's like your host, kind of short and often goofy. Amelia warms the shakes and the shivers out of the miners on the Fairdale River looking for gold. Fill her purse, it's a lost life, it's a miner's curse. And let me just take a couple of seconds to tell you about our name. You probably have heard that Montana is the last best place. Well, for one thing, it really is the shiz, which is why we all move here. And for the other thing, it's also the state's sort of official motto. It was coined for an anthology by the writer William Kittredge, a guy born in Oregon but claimed as our own. He taught creative writing for 29 years where I also teach, the University of Montana in Missoula. He's a little more famous. So sometime in the early 2000s, this other guy, who made his money in Vegas and owns this big luxury guest ranch just north of here called Paws Up, he tried to trademark the phrase last best place. And well, that move landed like a big fat cow pie with the people actually from here. Congress actually got involved, and now that phrase belongs to us and everyone else. It's officially untrademarkable and apparently totally riffable. And there you go. Oh, oh, oh. Here we go with the show's fat story, up north to Glacier National Park, where mountain goats are kings and also, well, pee lickers. This will all become clear through the reporting of independent producer Colin May.
Where are we going now, boss?
We'll head on over to the Hidden Lake Overlook, where we get a lot of goat activity on account of the high density of people that use the area.
On a rainy day in September, I'm hiking in Glacier National Park. I'm with a researcher, Wesley Sarmento, and his field technician, and we're looking for the park's iconic creature, the mountain goat. We cut back to the main trail, one of the park's most traveled because it's a relatively short trek to an astounding view of Hidden Lake, with Bear Hat Mountain looming over it.
Your typical July day, you'll have a good 50 people at any given moment there, and there'll be a good 10, 15 goats around. You know, weaving in and out of the trees and looking for those people's salt.
When Sarmento talks about goats accessing human salt, that's his nice way of saying that the mountain goats are licking up human urine.
Salt is an important resource for most alpine ungulates. And so the goats either get salt from their environment, natural mineral licks, or the goats at Logan Pass have keyed into human salt. Urine has a lot of salt and then they'll lick it up.
It's mainly a concern in the summer, when more than 2 million people visit Glacier. That human urine is deposited daily by visitors who sneak off trail to relieve themselves. Because of their proximity to humans at Logan Pass, mountain goat's behavior has changed. It's a process scientists and park managers call habituation. There's somewhere between 1,500 and 2,400 mountain goats in the park. About 10% of those are habituated. Visitors come to Glacier for sweeping views of crooked peaks and pristine lakes, but many rank a mountain goat sighting as a highlight. It's strange. It's pretty exciting to see a wild animal right next to the trail.
Oh, yes, that's what we came for.
Yeah, so you like seeing them?
Oh, yes, it's beautiful. And the fact is that they're so tame. They're right next. They don't go away when you walk up to them.
Well, we came here for our first anniversary. My wife was about 8 feet away.
Yeah.
Almost close enough to touch them.
Did that scare you at all?
No. No, they're really tame. You could literally probably walk up to and pet them.
Some people respect the animals. And they stay a safe distance away from the animals. Other people get way too close or trying to take a picture.
The National Park Service's rule is for visitors to stay 25 yards away from mountain goats. That simply isn't possible at Hidden Lake Overlook, where goats are wandering around the boardwalk. I explained to the visitors that the goats were there to lick up people's urine.
Really? Excellent.
How do you feel about that?
I feel good about it. As long as it's the ecosystem, you know, it's the way it works.
Makes a lot of sense. And you know what I was thinking is, of course, a tremendous attraction for the tourists, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe someone surreptitiously is putting out salt up there, for all I know.
Conspiracy theories aside, human salt has brought goats into closer contact with us than is natural. Sarmento's research is all about figuring out the extent of habituation, as well as its causes.
Another reason that the goats might be interacting with people is to get away from predators. Grizzly bears and mountain lions tend to shy away from people.
So the researchers need to know predator activity as well. Here's Chad Bacon, one of the techs.
You know, that entails just getting out there in the wild country, going out to the licks and where the habituated goats and the wild goats are, and looking for signs of predators, tracks, skulls, scats.
In order to gauge reaction, the method's surprisingly simple. Bacon puts on a bear suit and approaches the goats while Sarmento observes. The suit is literally a grizzly bear mascot costume, rented for the season from the University of Montana, home of the Grizz. They used to use the head, but realized a brown ski mask would suffice. From a set distance, the bear emerges from behind some bushes and moves on all fours toward the wary goats.
We don't act like we're going to go attack the goat. We're very mellow. We just act like a bear feeding in a meadow, rolling over rocks, doing typical bear behavior. And we watch to see how wild and habituated goats react to just seeing a bear.
So we have the bear as the predator, but the bighorn is used as the control.
It's a helmet with a styrofoam bighorn sheep head attached and a brown blanket to disguise the human form.
So a lot of times we're going to these licks and we'll see sheep and goats at the same lick, cohabitating that lick. They don't pose a threat to each other. So we use the bighorn to see, are they just scared of anything coming their way, or are they afraid of, you know, a bear shape not coming at them but in the area? And the findings have been really spectacular in that regard.
The methods seem bizarre, but the science is sound. Early results are showing that habituated goats have less severe reactions to the bear model, meaning that they have become less afraid of predators since intermingling with humans. Sarmento also works hard to get eyes on goats and meticulously documents their behavior.
We're here at Logan Pass. We're in a nice lush green meadow. Weather is quite stormy with rain and clouds and fog. It's likely that they'll not come down on a day like this, but we might see a couple.
Sarmento makes his time productive by documenting the goats' locations by scanning for signals from the radio collars. These very high-frequency radio collars are around the necks of 24 of the habituated goats. They function as tracking devices and are crucial to the research project.
Oh, we got goat collar P banging in here. Another reason that we're putting these collars out is mountain goats licking antifreeze off the Going to Sun Road. Collars will allow us to follow the goats after they lick the antifreeze and to see if they're getting sick or if they're dying.
They scan for particular goats, named according to the collar, goat A, goat B, goat U, and so on. I ask Bacon and Sarmento if they have a favorite from their season in the field.
Yeah, you know what? I'd say goat C, and that's our geriatric goat. She's probably, what, 10, 11, hell, maybe even 14 years old. But she just keeps on keeping on, you know. You know, Wes saw her the other day with a kid. Not her own. She's babysitting. There's a reason they call them nannies, and I think she proved why. And she's just a sight to see, definitely.
They're the mountain monarchs, these high country beasts. And you hardly ever see them that close up. They're usually way up on the cliffs, way far out of sight, and you need 40x binoculars to get a good view of these animals. And so Logan Pass is unique and offers that amazing experience to see these animals close up, to see their beautiful, long, shaggy fur, to see those powerful hooves, to see those long, sharp, saber-like horns. But even though, you know, we see them close up and it's awesome to see them close up, it's really not their natural habitat.
More than just affecting the goat's behavior, our proximity to them can be dangerous. In 2010, a man hiking on a popular trail in Olympic National Park tried to shoo a 370-pound goat out of his way. The goat attacked the hiker, goring him in the leg. It stood over him as he bled to death from his femoral artery.
It's particularly a concern when these goats are licking salt and they're fighting over the salt between each other. And so, you know, I'm surprised that someone hasn't been hurt already.
Sarmento's project will wrap up in July of 2016, and his research will directly inform Glacier's first ungulate management plan. The plan will outline ways to keep goats at safe distances and criteria for relocating potentially aggressive goats. Now that this field season has come to an end, Sarmento will analyze the data he's been collecting.
Because you know what? The field work's just an awesome component of it. It's awesome being out here, but it's important to get that science out to the folks and make sure that we're doing good science and to communicate it to the public.
In Glacier National Park, I'm Colin May.
Colin's published in several magazines and recently earned his master's in environmental writing at the University of Montana. And even though he has an understandable love for his hometown of Baltimore, Balmer, as locals call it, he's decided to stick around for now to see what happens. And let me tell you, Montana's better for it.
Well, when I was a little kid, I was a fat boy. I liked to eat.
Our quick hitter is about that guy, Tom Pack, who is the chef, the prep cook, the waiter, the cashier, the owner, the only guy inside the River Walk in Missoula. His wife's from Montana, and in his retirement from running huge big box stores in the States, he runs a restaurant on his own 6 days a week. In this tiny place, where, if you have to hit the head, it's over in the attached Subway sandwich shop, Tom, who grew up in Hong Kong, is making amazing dim sum.
And when I first started cooking for myself, I wouldn't even eat the food I cook. It doesn't taste like how Mom made it. So you just have to try it a few more times, and then gradually, and I learned the science of how to mix spices together. It's an art. I mean, it's like taking chemistry classes. Now we're at the Riverwalk Asian Grill. It's a local hole-in-the-wall place, and you know, after a few years, it's just been about three and a half years that I have to dim sum this thing. It's all finger food, you know, small dumplings.
Like the pot stickers in the spring roll.
Special kind of sticky rice with the mushrooms, tofu, and carrots as stuffing. And you wrap it with the lotus leaf and you steam it. See, one of the very interesting question that was asked the most by customers, what's your favorite? And my answer will always be one of each.
When you go to the Riverwalk, tell Tom I sent you. And order the soup with the homemade wontons. Oh my God, it's so good. For more about this podcast, check out our website, lastbeststories.org. Our thanks to the Free Music Archive for, well, free music that won't get us sued. I'm Jewel Banville. Thanks for listening.